A very warm welcome to our listeners on Manx Radio AM 1368. I'm Rob Pritchard, and this is Saturday Sport Classified. Over the next hour or so, bringing you the latest results, reaction and analysis to today's football action on Ireland and further afield. Plus, we'll be taking a look at what's been happening with the Isle of Man Women's National Football Team on their travels this weekend. We'll get some updates as well on the 2026 Manx National Rally, which is in its second and final day on Manx shores. And also looking ahead to the third round of the Andrus Racing Association Championship races up at Jerby Airfield in the north of the island tomorrow. But first of all, let's bring you the classified sporting results from across the Isle of Man for Saturday, the 9th of May 2026. They are as follows in football. The Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup quarterfinals. Corinthians 8, Ayr United 1. Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup semi-finals. Rushen United 0, Onchan 1 after extra time. The Canada Life Men's Premier League. Peel 3, Laxey 5. Foxdale 7, St Mary's 7. Ardern and Drug Unlimited Division 2. St George's versus Maloo awaiting result. Pulrose United 6, Colby 1. Moraine 0, Castletown 3. Ramsey Centre and Old Boys 5, Douglas Royal 1. Canada Life Combination 1. Union Mills versus St John's United awarded as an away walkover to St John's United. Union Mills unable to field a team. Ardern and Drug Unlimited Combination 2. Maloo versus Douglas Athletic awarded as a home walkover to Maloo. Douglas Athletic unable to field a team. And in an off-island friendly. Preston North End 2. Isle of Man Women's Team 4. Those are your classified sporting results for Saturday, the 9th of May 2026, here on Manx Radio AM 1368. A reminder as well for those looking to tune into Radio Caroline. That is continuing right now over on the Radio Caroline website. Head on over to www.radiocaroline.co.uk. And we will be rejoining Radio Caroline here on Manx Radio AM 1368 at the conclusion of this match. We're looking to the footballing results from across the Isle of Man today. And of course, further afield, our football correspondent Tony Meppam joins us. Tony, actually, before we get to some of the results, I believe one of the outstanding results, we may have an update.
It is. It's just come through. St George's 0, Maloo 3. Haven't got any goal scorers, but that was the score.
Excellent, Tony. Thank you very much. Well, Tony, a lot of focus on the cup competitions again today, with one of the quarter-final ties still to play in the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup and one of the last four ties as well. We'll start with the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup quarter-finals. So this game rearranged from the other week due to Corinthians and Ayr United players being involved in the Isle of Man men's national team. The winner of this contest would go up to face St George's in the last four stage, and it is Corinthians who have come out on top against Ayr United in a big win today at Ballafletcher, Tony, by 8-1.
Yeah, it was a brilliant score, this one, by the sound of it, at half-time, and it had a twist to it as well, because the information I had was at half-time, Corinthians were 6-0 up, but down to sort of 10 players. Stewie Smith, their last man, got red-carded, straight red, and that was a big problem then for Corinthians to deal with. But they got two more goals in the second half, and Ayr United got one as well. Jamie Callister got the goal for Ayr United, but for Corinthians, it was Conor Clark. He got a hat-trick. His strike partner, Sean Doyle, he got three. Declan Blake got one. And then it was Adam McCulloch got the eighth, I think it was, and then an own goal. So it could have proved costly in the second half, but luckily for Corinthians, they sort of packed together, and Stewie Smith's absence in that second period didn't affect them.
But also from a Corinthians side of things, I know when we spoke about this on Friday Sport Preview last night, you were, I suppose, having a more positive slant on Ayr United, really, you know, going into this competition. It's not been the greatest season from Ayr United's very high standards in the league this season, but an opportunity maybe missed this weekend, or were Corinthians just too strong?
It's hard to say, really, because let's face it, the league tables don't lie, and Ayr United are fourth from the bottom. They're 10th, and usually by their standards. But when you lose you know, quality players that they have over the last two or three years, it's going to affect you, and you know, that's the big problem. And this year, you know, Jamie Callister, he was absent for a few games, and Sean Kelly was as well. Jamie played today because obviously scored, but I'm not too sure if Sean played. And it's quite often a conversation that takes place in Manx football when I'm involved. And people say that Ayr United without Sean would find it really hard going. And he is one of the best players on the Isle of Man. But unfortunately, I don't know if he didn't play today or did. But, you know, Corinthians are in good form as well. And they wanted to get through into the semi-final. And they've done that, and they play against St George's now.
They will, yet facing St George's in the last four. Well, one of the last four ties took place today in the Manx Quality Sheds Hospital Cup semi-finals over at Croyt Lowy, with both Rushen United and Onchan looking to try and book their place in the final in a few weeks' time. Well, Tony, this went beyond the regulation distance, and it's the visitors who've just about come out on top, Onchan beating Rushen United by 1-0 after extra time.
Yeah, and thanks to just send me some information through. It does add a little bit of an explanation to it, how it was going. It was a 1-0 win for them, and a 115th minute win, and it's from Carl Presley. Well, Carl normally plays right back, so if that was the case, then well done, Carl. Know him really well, good player, and he's had a great season for the O's as well, so they'll be absolutely delighted and thoroughly deserve that for Onchan to get the final. Nothing against Rushen at all, but I think the season that Onchan have had, and we've spoke about it many, many times, Rob, during the programmes, is that they've been unbelievable. And when you look back at some of their stats for this season, if I can get it up, it's absolutely amazing, because right the way through all the age bands, they've done really well. And I was sent some information yesterday, if I can find it, because it was good reading. And you got any other scores there, Rob, while I try and find this one out for you?
One second. So we're looking towards the Canada Life Men's Premier League then while you're waiting information. So in the Canada Life Men's Premier League, Tony, of course, Peel already crowned Canada Life Men's Premier League champions this season. But on home soil today, losing out in an 8-goal thriller against Laxey.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, that's a real stinker for them, because, you know, when a bit like Colby today, received the trophy and then you lose the game, and, you know, to concede 5 as well, you wouldn't expected that one for Peel to have to deal with. But Taylor Andrews got one from the penalty spot. Thomas Brown got a goal, so he's well and truly in the lead for the Golden Boot. Daniel Bell as well with one. But the star for Laxey today, Egg Canner, he got 3. One of them was a penalty. Brody Patience got one, and Cameron Avery got the other one. So that's a great result for Laxey. That's their final game of the season. And I'm sure Peel boys are celebrating now, because they'll have the trophy in place, and they'll be hoping to and have a good night and have some food, have some drink, and see what comes tomorrow.
Indeed. Well, Tony, I don't think my voice has ever gone so high-pitched before we came on air when I heard this scoreline that you brought to me. 14 goals today between Foxdale and St Mary's. Foxdale, of course, already relegated from the Canada Life Men's Premier League, but in the last few weeks, results and performances have been picking up against the St Mary's side that have been impressive in the top flight this season. 14 goals, and all shared, Tony, because Foxdale 7, St Mary's 7. Where on earth has that come from?
I don't know. I really don't, and I haven't got the goal scorers for Foxdale, so if you could get us through, please, the scorers, it would help, because Jay Chatwood's certainly pushing hard at the top of the table for the Golden Boot. But Mark Wolfenden, he's had a great season. He got a hat-trick. Therese Thompson as well, who's done really well, he got a hat-trick. And Chris Cowley got the other one. Now, I've got that information now for you from Onchan, and basically what it is, they've had players away, fine. In the summer, we signed no first team players, but with the same squad, we have doubled our points tally from last season. Reached the Railway Cup and the Hospital Cup semi-finals. Well, now you've reached the Hospital Cup final. A young Combi team has reached the Junior Cup semi-final. We have won the Under 18 League A Cup, the Under 16s A League, the Under 14s A League. You know, it's absolutely fantastic, and they've reached the senior final, so I'm pretty certain Brian Callow and the likes of David Rees, who put so much work in that club, will be chuffed to bits with that one. And the final's on the 23rd of May.
And just coming back to Foxdale again, we touched on this in the last couple of weeks, Tony, is the fact that there have been a pickup in results recently. They got back-to-back wins the other week as well in the league. Obviously, they'll find themselves in Division 2 next season, but, you know, how many positives can they take from the last few weeks of this latest campaign going into Division 2, particularly if they can keep the squad they've got together?
Yeah, I think it's key is keeping the squad together. There's some really good young players in there. As long as Jay Chatwood plays, you've always got the chance of a game because he can score goals. He causes problems. But just overall, you know, it was probably halfway through the season they're looking at it and it's all doom and gloom and hardly a point on the board. And there that puts them today on 10 points, which, you know, is pretty reasonable to say that they were way down not too far ago. But, you know, to score seven against a team like St Mary's takes some doing. And I hope Andy Corkle stays in charge because he's a really good motivator. He's great for the club right the way through, and other people have been involved in it, and it's just one of those. Sometimes you have to go backwards to go forward again. They got promoted, they hoped to stay, but then, you know, unfortunately Jay Charmer left, Lee Gale left, and they were just under pressure then to try and win games and try and get some points to stay up. But, you know, the way it's finished up for them, I'd take a lot from that. And I think if they do keep that squad, Foxtel could have a really good chance next season and maybe bounce it back up.
OK, so that's the Canada Life Men's Premier League results today, and goals are plenty in the doubleheader in the Premier League today. Our Dunedin Drunk Limited Division 2, now going into this weekend, there were still four teams mathematically in the hunt for that final promotion place from the division. Colby already crowned champions. They were presented with the trophy today. We'll come to that game in a few moments. But elsewhere, Glen Crutchery Road today, St George's, who we now know will face Corinthians in the Manx Squadshed Hospital Cup semi-finals in the coming weeks. They hosted Maloo today, and Maloo, who have had an uptick in form themselves in the last few weeks in Division 2, taking 3 goals and 3 points today, beating St George's by 3-0.
Yeah, that's all the information I've got. To be fair, Robin, I've just had a text message in as well. Take that one off Daniel Bell and give it to Izzy Dunn. So I'll trust Matthew Woods on that one. So it was Izzy Dunn who got the last one there for Peel, but no goal scorers for Maloo.
And then, Tony, the game that you were at today. So Colby, already crowned Division 2 champions, as I've just mentioned. They headed to Paul Rose United today. Paul Rose United, one of those four teams still in the mix for promotion. Whatever happened today, Colby would be presented with the trophy. That did happen this afternoon. Not the best afternoon for them, though, on the pitch, was it? Because Paul Rose United, with a big, big result today, beating Colby by 6-1.
Yeah, brilliant performance by Paul Rose right the way through. They just stuck at it. And, you know, when you've got people like Owen Canapa playing for you, you're always in with a chance. And you know, it was Jordan Edge who got the first goal, it was. And you just thought, you know, Colby are going to do it here. And then they had a penalty. Jordan Edge stepped up to take it. Don't forget, he's racing for the silver boot. And the penalty was saved. And Russ Dawson pulled off a really good save. It's through the middle, but he got himself in a really good position. And then after that, you know, Paul Rose did really well. You know, Owen Canapa got two. And then Nathan Halsall got the third just before half time. And then in the second half, Owen Canapa got a penalty. So that completed his hat-trick. Well done to him. And then James Lowther, there's a name for the future, because this time last week, Rob, he's allowed to do it. He played the first half for Paul Rose and looked really exciting, and then went on to play for the Ireland senior men's team, 16 years of age, and scored in that one as well. So there's a name for the future. Well, he got 2 goals today, and 2 clever goals as well. But Colby, be disappointed. They're down the clubhouse now, having pitches and a couple of beers, I'm sure. But, you know, they'll look at the game. They've got a game against Douglas Royal midweek, and that could be a clash of the Titans, because on that one, if the sums are right, listening to Jordan Edge today, Jordan Edge is 2 ahead of Bailey Ashton. So Bailey got one today, so that could be 1 now. So with those two juggernauts going for the silver boot as well, that's going to be interesting to see how that one goes. But I'm not too sure if Jordan Edge might be on holiday.
We'll have to see. Still a few games to go in the season, of course. We talk about the four teams in contention for promotion. Well, two of those actually met each other today. Moran versus Castletown. Switch of venue for this. This actually took place at Castletown today. And the Southerners coming out on top, I suppose, making, in inverted commas, home advantage count, Tony, because they beat Moran by 3-0. Could prove a big swing in the promotion hunt.
Yeah, huge result that for Castletown. And watching Moran win midweek, you just thought to yourself, well, maybe they're back on it again, but they've lost. So that's, I think, 2 defeats, then the win, then another defeat. So they're not doing themselves any favours. But Castletown, great result. Jacob Crook was who got 2 of the goals. Ross Crawford got the other one. We'll go to the league table in a minute, but also a great performance by young Lachlan Mitchell, the referee there. Bit of a journey for him, because this game was switched from Moran to Castletown, and Lachlan got there in good time, and they got the game underway and performed really well on the field.
And elsewhere, another of the teams in the promotion hunt is Ramsey Ucent and Old Boys. They hosted Douglas Royal today. Ramsey Ucent and Old Boys getting the job done, beating Douglas Royal 5-1.
Yeah, good performance by Ramsey, who sent in old boys and usual goal scorers. Leighton Ballard, he got two goals. Adrian Scarabucci, he got two. And Niall Johnson got the other one. Bailey Ashton, it was, who got the goal for Douglas Royal from the penalty spot.
And elsewhere, there were due to be two games in the combination leagues today. One in Canada Life Combination 1, Unimills versus St John's United. That was awarded as an away walkover to St John's United. Unimills unable to field a team. A similar story for the one game in Ardern and Drugga Limited Combination 2 between Maloo and Douglas Athletic. That is awarded as a home walkover to Maloo. Douglas Athletic unable to field a team this time around. Just quickly going back to Division 2, Tony. So from, obviously, there's still so many different permutations, but as it stands, what's the promotion race looking like between those four teams?
Right, the way it's looking at the moment, Colby have obviously won the league. They've played 25, so they've got two to play on 62 points. Then we have Ramsey Centre and Old Boys played 25 on 51. We've got Castletown who've played 24 on 47. We've got Paul Rose who've played 24 for 45. And Moran have played 22 for 40. So if you sort of look at Moran, they've still got five to play. So they could get 55 points and finish second in the league. If I can use this moment, Rob, I've already spoken to you about it. Where are we with the Paul Henry Gold Cup? At the moment, we haven't got our four teams. So we cannot progress with the Paul Henry Gold Cup. We have to be finished the season basically 2 weeks tomorrow. So the chances of getting the Paul Henry in are very, very slim. We'll keep a monitor on the league tables, and if it changes dramatically, we might be able to do something with it. But we certainly can't, I don't feel, safety-wise, look into practice week or TT week. I remember one time we looked at it once before, and people just said, you've got to remember medical emergencies and stuff like that and roads being shut. You could have a serious problem on your hand, and I take that on board. But at the moment, there's no decision being made. But at the moment, we are really struggling to be able to get those four teams. Then we've got to get two semis in, then we've got to get a final in. That's going to be tough.
Indeed. Well, looking ahead then, because we still do have football action, Tony, and we do have time to take a look at this, going into Sunday, and most of the focus will be on the semi-finals of the Ascot Hotel Junior Cup. They'll both be kicking off at 2 o'clock on Sunday. To start with, North versus South, really. Ramsey, so the Canada Life Combination 1 winners this season, second time in 3 years, incidentally. They'll be coming up against, if I can get the words out, last season's Junior Cup finalists, Rushen United. This could be an interesting one.
Well, it could, because if you remember about 3 days ago, these two met each other, and it was Rushen who came out winners. But whether Ramsey had players not available, not too sure. But certainly the Junior Cup is all to play for, because there's four very good teams in there. You've got to look at the league champions, which is Ramsey. Rushen are just a little bit off them. And it'll go down to whatever squad members are available. So we'll keep you posted on those results for Monday morning. But Ramsey against Rushen, I'm going to go for Ramsey.
And elsewhere, the other tie, Onken versus Braddon. This is actually going to be played at Braddon tomorrow, isn't it?
Correct. And, Onken's pitch now, it's obviously summertime. But I'm going to go for Onken to win this one. But take note of Braddon, because he knocked out, at that time, the league leaders, Corinthians, out of the Junior Cup. So they've got a good team there. But I just thought Onken got some really exciting young players there. I've seen them. And, I just feel that they've got the edge at the moment.
All right, and there is going to be a trio of games in the Masters football tomorrow, all kicking off at 2 o'clock. Tony, first of those, Douglas High School Boys up against St Mary's.
Well, this one I think is near enough for the league. I know Union Mills has still got a chance in there, but if it goes against where you think it might go, then Union Mills might just be able to creep in. But I know Douglas High School Old Boys pretty strong. I think St Mary's are missing a few tomorrow, so I'm going to go for Old Boys to win that one.
Indeed. Elsewhere in the Masters football, Union Mills. Union Mills. District.
Yeah, they're strong. And, Union Mills have been competing with Old Boys at St Mary's right away through the season. So I'll go for Union Mills to win that. And on the Corinthians and Colby game, I've just had a text through about 20 minutes ago. Corinthians can't field a team, so that game will be postponed and awarded a walkover for Colby.
Okay, thank you very much, Tony. Quickly before we move on, of course, we still have one outstanding semi-final in the Hospital Cup. When's that due to be played?
That's due to be played next week. The 16th was always the spare week, so the Corinthians-Geordies game will go ahead next Saturday.
Excellent, Tony. Thank you very much. We'll come back to you in just a few moments. But elsewhere in football this weekend, the Alabama women's national team has been getting a busy summer schedule kick-started today. Today, they managed to earn a 4-2 victory at Preston North End in a friendly being held at the home of Longridge Town Football Club. And today's match has started preparations for the team's campaign at the Cherry Godfrey Cup in Guernsey next month, which the Isle of Man will go into as defending champions. Before that, they'll also have another friendly after this weekend when they take to the turf at the Bowl in Douglas to play FC United of Manchester on Saturday the 16th of May. Well, Isle of Man women's team manager Wayne Leacy spoke with us at Manx Radio ahead of his team's trip to Lancashire today. I asked him about his long-term ambitions for the squad and also about the quality of players at his disposal since training got back underway recently.
Well, we've been training actually all winter, so we'll be doing a couple of sessions a month all winter. The squad has actually increased now. The quality coming through from the youngsters to players coming back into the game and getting themselves into the training squad has been really good. So preparation over the last few weeks has been good. Training's been good. Everyone's up for it and so excited for this summer to be able to organise matches on island, off island, and obviously have the Cherry Recovery Cup in June, which, as you said, we go to defend. It's really exciting.
Like you said, you know, a big squad that you've got to choose from. You know, is it a nice dilemma to have that you've got players, that not just the amount of players, but the quality of players available to, I suppose, fight for their places?
Yeah, since I took the role 4 years ago, the training squad has just increased in numbers. And that's not just anyone coming into the squad. The quality is there that to play, in my opinion, at island level. So the training squad's now over 30 players, with some of those players being in university, some on island. You've got the youngsters coming through. So when it's come to, it just gets harder and harder every year when I have to pick a squad. So I've picked a squad of 16 players for the Cherry Godfrey, and I'll use these two matches this weekend and next weekend as preparation matches for the Cup.
The fact that you're getting all this preparation ahead of something like the Cherry Godfrey Cup, a competitive summer, just how valuable is that for you as a manager as well as the players?
Oh, it's massive, Rob. Without these games, you're going into a cup kind of blind. So these games gives us an opportunity to work on formations, using the players in different positions, and it really gives the players a build-up and the excitement towards the cup, yeah.
And of course, a lot has to happen behind the scenes to make these things happen. There's a lot of logistics, a lot of conversations, a lot of phone calls as well. So what do you think it says to the likes of yourself and everyone else involved to get these friendlies on? Because it doesn't just happen by magic. It isn't always easy at times.
No, it's pretty tough, to be fair. Obviously, when we want friendlies, doesn't necessarily marry in with when teams want friendlies. So we can't have friendlies over the winter because it's normally in their season. So a big shout goes out to Sean Gritton, our chair, who organises these friendlies. He works tirelessly behind the scenes to get these over the line. So to get friendlies like Preston North End, which is a massive club, FC United of Manchester, which, as we know, is a relatively new club, but it's huge in Manchester, to get them onto the island for a friendly next week, it's fantastic.
And from what you know of what the players have been saying since the Island Games, of course, the heartbreak of a penalty shootout defeat to Bermuda, who some eyed as clear favourites for that tournament. You know, what did you all take from that experience, that game as well, in terms of, and also progressing from bronze to silver between two Island Games in Guernsey and then to Orkney last summer?
Bronze in Guernsey against Bermuda in the semi-final, and we lost 1-0. Looking back now, I was distraught at the time for losing the match, but in all honesty, we were second best and we defended for a lot of that match. And if you think 2 years ahead to Orkney last year, we end up with them in the final. Like you said, they're favourites without a doubt. And we were actually the better team. And to lose on penalties is absolutely gutting, because the players put everything into that match. In fact, they put everything into the whole week. Playing 5 games of football in 6 days is a massive challenge. But that's the whole challenge of the Island Games, and it's great. But to lose the final on penalties, gutting. But we were good. We were really good. And that just shows the improvement of the squad, improvement of the team.
And off that point, like you say, progress of the squad, and also what you previously said, with the amount of players that you've now got at your disposal that you believe have the quality to represent the island, what do you think it says about the potential of women and girls football on Ireland going forward if it's harnessed properly?
Oh, it's massive. It's massive. With the quality coming through, we know the youngsters, the junior setup for the girls is massive, with hundreds of girls playing. So that just means that those quality players are going to filter into the Ireland team. It then means, obviously, competition for places breeds improvement, and everyone's just going to get better and better.
And finally, on you yourself as manager, it's obviously a few years now that you've had this role as well, and we've already mentioned, you know, a couple of Ireland games in the meantime as well. So what has this role taught you as a manager as well, and what you like to implement, and also how you can evolve on what you do?
I came into the role 4 years ago, knowing the kind of quality that it was about at the time, knowing the kind of football I wanted to play because of that quality. What I've done, we touched on it before about how hard is it to pick a squad. I've been very clear with the squad, the training squad, in terms of when a tournament's finished, i.e. when the Ireland game's finished, the squad gets reset, competition for places restarts, and everyone's competing. And I think that's helped to push everyone forward to improve. I think I'm quite clear in terms of how I want the team to play, and the players know that. I think also how aggressive our team can be at times, which is what football's all about. As well as the nice football we can play, we need to make sure that we're competing, especially when we don't have the ball. So those are the kind of things I'll be focused on.
And finally, just looking a little more long term, of course, busy summer coming up, as we've just been speaking about, but in just over a year's time, the International Ireland Games returning the Faroe Islands for 2027. No doubt the Isle of Man women's team will be wanting to make an impression there. So between, let's say, the Cherry Godfrey Cup and the games in the Faroe Islands in 2027, how important will it be, in whatever guise it could take, to make sure that the team is getting more matches and more experience, more preparation between this summer and 2027?
It's vital, Rob, to be honest. As we touched on before, it's so difficult to organise those friendlies, whether it be on island or off island. So we rely on the likes of Sean Gritton, and we push ourselves to get those friendlies booked in, because the preparation is vital when it comes to the Ireland games.
That was Wayne Leacy, the Isle of Man women's national team manager, speaking ahead of the weekend, and of course his side moving to a 4-2 friendly victory away at Preston North End today, played at the Inglewhite Road Stadium, the home of Longridge Town Football Club. So a reminder, the Isle of Man 4-2 winners, the Isle of Man scorers today, Sarah Wignall, direct from a corner, in fact, in the 12th minute. Into the second half, after it was 1-1 at the break, Preston North End, they'd taken the lead initially in the first before the Isle of Man equalised. Preston North End led early in the second half. Lisa Castain then got another equaliser for the Isle of Man in the 63rd minute. And then two goals in the final 10 minutes of normal time from the Isle of Man sealing the victory. Tia Leacy in the 83rd minute, and then Lydia Shaw, the icing on the cake, with a strike in the 89th minute. And Tony, coming up against different opposition, the Isle of Man women's national team this weekend against the Preston North End side that actually got promoted from their division in the pyramid over in England as well. And a fantastic result for the Isle of Man women's team on the road.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's all preparation for the Cherry Godfrey. But what they needed was tough games. I think that's something that, you know, maybe over the last couple of years, they've had a couple of games that were expected to give them a real good run around, but it didn't quite sort of happen. But today it's worked, and then they got another game next Saturday. But, you know, well done to them. And, you know, Tia's Leacy being back, Lydia Shaw being back, helps Sarah Wignall being back in the squad. Three very experienced and quality players coming back in the squad. I know Tia's been there for a couple of years now, but that's what you needed. There's some really good young players coming through as well. And we'll wait and see. The youth games were on today, and how many of those young girls come through and represent the island as well, because it's happened before and it'll happen again. But, you know, that's great result that for Wayne and the team, and well done to all the girls.
Yeah, I'll come to the youth games in a moment. I was going to pick your brains on that just a little bit from a football perspective. Come to that in a moment. Listening to Wayne there ahead of this weekend as well, he agrees at least that he has a very nice dilemma to have. He believes, you know, the quality across the board of both experienced and newer players as well is something that obviously it does make for some tough decisions going into games, and no doubt for the Cherry Godfrey Cup and then the Ireland Games next summer as well. But I suppose you'd rather be in that situation than, you know, scraping the bottom of the proverbial barrel.
Well, that's right. And I think certainly with Wayne, he's always set his stall out that, you know, if you want to be included in the squad, you must train. And at times the numbers weren't up to scratch, but now they are. And that's down to, you know, the training that's sort of going on. But also the players themselves, they've sort of decided, well, you know, we've got a chance here, you know, go for gold in the Ireland Games. We can go win the Cherry Godfrey again, because I was blessed to see the last one in Jersey. But, you know, it's just having the quality come through. There's some great coaches out there as well, doing some great things, you know, coaching these young girls. And, you know, you're looking at sort of Peel and Corinthians, who are sort of the dominant sort of teams in senior women's football. But then when you look sort of down the line a little bit with Onken, you've also got D&D who've worked so hard, and D&D could possibly have a girls' team next year. That'd be absolutely brilliant, and as accolade to all the hard work that the coaches put in. But, you know, okay, when Wayne gets a hold of them, he can develop them, and they're playing with better players and it pushes them on. But key is the opposition. We need to be tested. That'll make the players stronger, and hopefully those sort of quality games that we're having at the moment will continue.
And just a reminder as well, the Alaman women's team back in action at the Bowl in Douglas next weekend. So back on home soil, they'll face FC United of Manchester Saturday the 16th of May. So just finally, Tony, very quickly, on the Manx Youth Games now. Very quick context for those who don't know. The Manx Youth Games have been taking place across the Isle of Man today. And for those who don't know what it is an annual event that aims to get children of different ages, specifically in school years 2 to 10, involved in a variety of different sports, 17 different activities specifically on offer this year. And the main aim of it is not the competitive aspect of sport, but to make sure the children on the island have the chance to try something different, be social, possibly make new friends, and also keep active as well. And women's football was one of those activities, part of the Manx Youth Games today. Tony, from a footballing perspective on the Manx Youth Games, the fact that the island has an event like this to give, in this case, young girls the chance to try out football, see if they like it, and there's no pressure to continue it if they don't want to. But how important are these training grounds, almost, if you want to call it that, for people to get involved in football on the island in the long term, to progress through the junior setup and maybe into senior football for the future?
It's absolutely huge, and it's a long journey because, as you say, what ages they are, you know, 10, 11, you know, your senior football career starts at 16. But we've had some really good sort of players come through, and it's great for them to try it out. And then if they like the idea, then they can find a team to go and play with against. And you can always get in contact with the Isle of Man Football Association. They'll guide you to a club that is looking for players to try and, you know, try and spread it out more even, I think. It would be great to have, you know, all the girls or women's senior teams with junior teams, but it doesn't happen. Look at Corinthians. They haven't had one now for about 5 or 6 years. It just hasn't been able to get it off the ground. But it's so, so important. And it's great that what the government do and what the sports do, the coaches who put it all together, they are the ones that really make the players interested and love the game, whatever sport it may be. And it's a great opportunity to try something out, and then certainly team sport. And if you like it, go for it. If not, try something else out.
Excellent, Tony. Thank you very much, as always.
Manx Radio Sport, brought to you by The Printshed. Visit theprintshediom.com today to set up your personalised web shop for your sports club or business.
Now today, as marked the second and final day of the 2026 Manx National Rally, stages have been continuing throughout Saturday. Now, if you missed the news last night, some tragic developments from this year's Manx National Rally. It was confirmed on Friday evening in a statement by Motorsport the UK that a competitor involved in this year's Manx National Rally had sadly died following a medical incident on one of the stages. During that same statement, Motorsport UK did confirm as well that the event would still go ahead as scheduled, but with one change: the stage that the incident occurred on yesterday would not be run again during the meeting as a mark of respect. And as we said on Friday Sport Preview yesterday, we will say once again today our thoughts and prayers with all those affected by the tragic events that have happened at this year's Manx National Rally, and our thoughts and deepest condolences go out to the competitors' family and friends and all of those in the rallying community at this very difficult time. Away from that, and just keeping an eye on developments, I guess, throughout the rest of the day as the Manx National Rally draws to a conclusion, is motorsport commentator Chris Boyd, who joins us live now. Chris, good evening. What can you tell us about what's happened in the Manx National Rally today?
Yeah, good evening, Rob. Good evening, everyone. As you say, the rally did restart, if you like, last night after that very sad news. The rally restarted. Ryan Loughran, the Irish driver, with our local co-driver Rob Fagg from Kurt Michael in the Skoda Fabia, they led the way, after the daytime leg yesterday. They extended their lead slightly last night into sort of 25, 26 seconds. They've dominated really throughout today. It's been a very long day today. Lots of cancelled stages once again today for various reasons from the organisers. The rally running very late. The leading crews have only got back to the Andreas Rally Village to finish the rally within the last, 45 minutes or so probably. And there are still crews on the road making their way through the final stage to get back to the rally finish. But at the front, it is Ryan Loughran, the Irish driver, who came ninth last year on his debut here. He recruited Rob Fagg for this year to have a real challenge, and that has paid dividends. They have won in the Skoda Fabia Rally 2 by 20.8 seconds. They survived a late scare. They had an incident involving a pheasant on one of the stages over Druidale and down through Ingebrek that damaged the radiator, and they were very concerned that they might not be able to get through the final few stages. As it happens, two of those three stages were cancelled. They've managed to get through the last stage and get themselves back to Andreas on the final road section, so they will take victory. They will be 20.8 seconds ahead of the Northern Irish crew of Niall McGonigal and Colin McKenna in a Volkswagen Polo GTI. McGonigal and McKenna won the Chris Kelly Memorial stages here last October, but they really are only a very recent move to closed roads rallying. They're usually doing forest rallying, and that's where they made their name. They came here for the Chris Kelly as one of their first asphalt rallies last October and won that, and now they followed that up with probably an even better result here this weekend, second place on the Manx National Rally. In third and moving up from six overnight are Jason Pritchard and Phil Clark in the Toyota Yaris Rally 2. They are five times former winners, and they made a load of changes, I think, to the car setup last night. They were saying the car was far too soft yesterday. They've managed to change some of the suspension settings. They've had their favourite Baldwin stage where they're just lightning quick. They took 18 seconds out of everybody this morning on that stage over Druidale, Ingebrek and the Baldwins, and they took another 6 seconds out of everybody this afternoon, and that has moved them up from sixth to final spot on the podium. Fourth place will go to another Irish crew, Cal McCarthy and Eric Conlon in a Citroën. In fifth place, David Wright and Jane Nicol from Scotland are in a Ford Fiesta. And Hugh Hunter, who won the rally in 2017 with Rob Fagg, this will be Rob's second victory. He has finished sixth with Andy Marchbank, this time in a Ford Fiesta. In terms of the locals, the leading crew will be Ben Hardy and David Ratcliffe. Leading all local crew, this is obviously Rob Fagg wins the rally outright. Ben and David in their Ford Escort are going to complete in 24th place. Max Murray and Matty Owen in the Citroën DS3 will be 28th. Late disappointment for Harry Fox. He's retired, we think, on the final stage. And so that means that third of the local crews, he was lying third of the local crews going into that stage, will now go to Andrew Dudgeon, the former Manx Grand Prix winner, and Joe Dooley in their Ford Escort. They will finish 41st overall, just one spot ahead of Sean Kelly and Ben Wild in a Mitsubishi Evo 9. It's been a long, challenging weekend for the organisers, certainly, and we do want to say a huge thank you to all of the marshals and event officials, timekeepers, radio crews, everybody that's been out there helping put this event on. Mammoth task with such a huge entry. Lots of pressure on the organisers to try and get stages running here, there, with lots of problems going on, and they've done a grand job. And at the end of it all, we have a Manx winner. Rob Fagg becomes a two-time winner of the Manx National Rally.
Thank you for those details, Chris. And just very quickly before you go as well, I mean, what's happened in terms of results and timings, in many respects, a secondary thing, given what has happened at this year's event. And like you point out as well, record entries this year, 170 cars in the field, well over 200 actually applied to take part. Some of them couldn't do so, had to be turned away, such as those. It was over 230, is what we were told by Deputy Clerk of the Course, Mark Ellison, ahead of the event. So many people look so fondly on this particular event, and of course some very sad circumstances indeed this year, but I imagine the rallying community has really pulled together this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. The finest example, we see it in all branches of motorsport, that it really is family knit, and it's built around families and groups of people that all know one another, and it's got that very family feel, and that has definitely pulled together this weekend. And Daryl has never been far from anyone's thoughts at any point, that's for sure.
Excellent, Chris. Thank you so much for your time and all the best for the rest of the weekend. Chris Boyd, motorsport commentator there, reporting on the results of this year's Manx National Rally with Manxman Rob Fagg, along with driver Ryan Loughran, taking the top honours in this year's event. Just a quick mention as well before we move on to other matters motorsport. There has been plenty going on for the Isle of Man men's national hockey team today. A reminder that this weekend they are taking part in the 2026 England Hockey County Championships being held at Nottingham Hockey Centre across today and tomorrow. At least four games for the Isle of Man men's side at the tournament, and three of those games have taken place today. Two victories and one defeat so far today. So they kick-started the campaign earlier today with a win over Shropshire, a 3-1 win. In fact, their second game of the day up against the UK Armed Forces, a 2-1 victory. Penalty corner goals from Andy Whiting and Elliot Reid in that second game, handing the Isle of Man a 2-1 victory over the UK Armed Forces. And in their third and final game of the day, a tough task up against a strong Yorkshire team, the Isle of Man just missing out by 2-1 up against Yorkshire. Their final group game, if you'd like to call it, will take place tomorrow for the Isle of Man. They'll come up against the host county, Nottinghamshire, tomorrow. So all the best for them tomorrow. And just a quick reminder as well on motorsport matters, of course, the final day of this year's Northwest 200 has been taking place in Northern Ireland today. A bit of a reminder of what has happened so far today. In the opening race of the day, the Super Twin Sport Bike race over four laps, Peter Hickman taking victory late on in that race. The following six-lap Superbike race, the first of two Superbike races today, Glen Irwin taking victory after a great battle with Dean Harrison there. So Glen Irwin on his return to the Northwest, continuing his superb Superbike record. He is the record Superbike win holder around the Triangle Circuit. After that, the Super Sport race, that was shortened to four laps following a red flag just before the race took place. After a short delay and a restart over four laps, it was Michael Dunlop who took victory. There was a separate red flag incident right at the end of that race, in the Super Sport race, I should say. The race was declared after four laps, Michael Dunlop taking victory in that one. The Superstock race followed that. That was originally due to take place over six laps, but there was a red flag incident in the initial start on lap one. After a short delay, the Superstock race got back underway over four laps. And a great story here, because debutant Storm Stacey, a very popular figure in the British Superbike Championship paddock, making his maiden appearance at the Triangle Circuit this year, taking victory in his first race victory over the Northwest 200. A fantastic result. And in the latest of the races to be completed over four laps was the second Super Twin / Sport Bike session, and this time veteran Jeremy McWilliams taking victory. Just missed out to Peter Hickman in the first race. He's been going strong all weekend, has the veteran rider, and at 62 years of age, he extends his own record at the Northwest 200 of being the oldest rider to win a Northwest 200 race. The final race of the event, the six-lap Superbike race to round things out over on the North Causeway, it is now underway. So six laps, that race underway. We are just at the end of lap run, and Storm Stacey up against Dean Harrison going into Juniper Hill at the leading at the end of the first lap. So it's a right old battle going on in that particular race. We'll bring you updates as and when we can get them. Well, finally, tonight we'll take a look at motorsport elsewhere, because this weekend racing action returns to Jerby Airfield for round three of this year's Andrus Racing Association Championships. A testing session has been held at the Northern Circuit today before racing takes centre stage tomorrow. And as expected in these early stages of the campaign, the battles are starting to emerge across the respective classes. ARA Club Secretary Neil Champion has been speaking with us this week, where he also explains the importance of the recent announcement that the association is taking control of operations at the Jerby Circuit for at least the next 5 years.
Oh, well, we're incredibly enthusiastic about it. Obviously, we love the place. It is our home. And we've got lots of plans to develop the place in every sense. So obviously, we're not putting houses on there, but we want to make the infrastructure a bit better, but also make it into a real asset for the island and get much better use out of it. And, you know, we've got cycle events and various other things going on, and there are various users doing it, but we think we're going to have more track days for locals and for visitors and that sort of thing. And I say, just turn it into a proper asset for the whole island.
And of course, away from the racing this weekend, there are still plenty of riders in action off island as well, and have been recently. Of course, we had the Cookstown, and now, of course, as we speak, of course, the Northwest 200 is underway as well. So how good's it been to see members of the ARA fraternity, if you like, taking part in both of those events?
Yeah, I mean, we're incredibly proud of where our guys go on to, you know, make a bigger splash in bigger ponds, really. At Cookstown, Liam Wood, who was our novice and clubman champion last year. So, you know, he's only started racing relatively recently. In his first ever road race, he got a second place, which is great, you know. And Dale Brew, who was an MGP newcomer last year, and he's also crew chief at the Crowe Brothers for their sidecar team. So he knows one end of a spanner from the other as well. He took a win at Cookstown as well, and we're incredibly proud of that. And we also had good performances from Dan Sale and Marcus Simpson, and we've got a couple of our regulars are at the Northwest right now.
Looking to this weekend then, obviously, given the fact that some riders do have commitments at the likes of the Northwest and so on this weekend, there may be a couple of changes in terms of the those who will make an appearance this weekend. But one big battle that has caught the eye of the last couple of years and is already doing at the start of this season is in the Open Solo Centre Championship, isn't it? And that battle's going to continue this weekend.
Well, yeah. So obviously Jamie Kringle is multiple centre champion, and the last couple of seasons, Rory Parker has given him a good chase and kept him honest. But this year, it seems like Rory had really stepped up, because at the first event in March, Rory took wins in both the races. And Jamie was right behind him, and they made a real race of it. But Rory got two wins, Jamie got 2 seconds. At the second event last month, it was the other way around. So Jamie took the two wins, Rory took the 2 seconds, really, again, just a couple of tenths behind him. So they're equal on points with two rounds down. So this is obviously a championship that's going to go right through the season now. And the quality of the racing at the front, these fellas are just so fast. And there's no quarter given or asked, and it's just nip and tuck at every lap.
And elsewhere, another battle that's been going on for the last couple of years in the Supersport Championship between Kyle Casement and Grant Thompson. Grant Thompson away at the Northwest 200 this weekend. So Kyle potentially with a chance to extend his advantage at the top of the standings this weekend?
Yeah, that's what you've got to do, isn't it? You've got to, if you're there, you've got to, you know, make hay when you can and get the points on the board. And I'm sure when Grant gets back, he'll be trying to reverse that. I'm just looking at the points now. Yeah, Carl's got a few points there, so I think he'll be feeling quite comfortable as long as he gets out and does well this weekend. But of course, you know, it's bike racing, anything can happen, so there's nothing set in stone.
And another who's impressed early in the campaign again is Francesco Feraldo as well. He tops the standings in the singles, twins and triples championship, as well as the Super Twins and Sport Bike Championship. Had a great season up at Derby last season, and already starting very well in a couple of championships this time around.
Yeah, he's a really, really class act. Is Frankie, and I was looking at his lap times. What he does on a single is pretty incredible. You know, I'm thinking, blimey, I wasn't that fast on a big four cylinder bike. But I think last year he won three championships, which we think is probably a record. We don't think anyone's ever done three in one season before. But he's looking good to get another couple this year. But there are some people keeping him, keeping him on his toes and making sure he has to work for it.
For anyone who's maybe listening in for the first time, maybe wants to see what racing is like at Derby this weekend, how can people come down and find out more?
On the Sunday, the practice starts at 9:30, and then we'll be having racing from 11:30, a short break around 12:30-ish for a quick lunch break, so marshals get a break, and then we run through the rest of the afternoon.
That was Neil Champion, the club secretary of the Andreas Racing Association, ahead of the third round of racing for this year's Andreas Racing Association Championships at Derby Airfield throughout tomorrow. So just a reminder as well, bikes, as Neil said, are due to be out on track from approximately 9:30 a.m. tomorrow, and for spectators, entry will be £6 for adults, whilst under 16s go free. And a reminder as well, there'll be no sidecar racing taking place tomorrow. The only three-wheeled action there this weekend was during today's non-competitive testing session. No sidecar racing round at the Andreas Racing Association Championships this weekend. And just quickly, another look at the Northwest 200 before we leave you in the great hands of Radio Caroline. We're into lap 3 of the final superbike race at the Northwest 200 as they came across the line onto lap 3. It was Storm Stacy still leading Glenn Irwin, those two having a right battle out front, but not counting out Dean Harrison, Peter Hickman and Josh Brooks all in the mix as well. And some of the big news early on in the race as well, Michael Dunlop is a retirement. He's pulled into the pits coming towards the end of lap 2, so that's the end of the race for Michael Dunlop, but looks like all still to play for down on the North Causeway, on the Causeway Coast, I should say. Well, anyway, thank you very much for joining us on Saturday Sport Classified this evening on Manx Radio AM 1368. Hope you have yourself a wonderful rest of your weekend, whatever you're doing. From us, until next time, it's bye for now. We'll hand you back over to Radio Caroline.
Manx Radio Sport, brought to you by The Printshed. Visit theprintshediom.com today to set up your personalised web shop for your sports club or business.